Thank you. So traditionally, biological components are studied individually, but more and more evidence has shown that actually different cellular components, that they actually interact together in order to perform any single actions. And so therefore, recently, or more than recently, various graphs have emerged. So there are actually a lot of biological graphs that have emerged, but they still use the graph structure. So here is an example of a graph where the vertices could represent a lot of different things. It could represent genes, it could represent proteins, where the edges can represent, for example, functional interactions or physical interactions. These biological graphs, they are huge, they're complex in general. Just to give you one side of the story, and bear in mind, this is only one side of the story, I'm going to go in the mRNA level. Because of time, I only have time to go through just one example of such. So first of all, in general, each cell in our body have the same DNA. But we all notice that we have different cells in our body. For example, in this picture, there's some nerve cells and blood cells. And the difference is that it lies in the differences in which the subset of genes that a cell expresses. So depending on the genes that is being expressed, different proteins will then activate it, and so does their interactions. So, but then besides different types of cells, different stimuli can also lead to different subsets of genes that are expressing in a cell. And so therefore, gene expression study has been used, and it enables the understanding of the mechanism in molecular level. So just to give you an example of co-expression graphs, that's just my talk, I'm going to represent graphs like this. So for a co-expression graph, given I have gene expression data on condition A, and I have gene expression data on condition B. And then the genes will represent, the vertices is going to be genes, and then the edge will be generated if M and N correlates. And then therefore, graph G will represent condition A, and then graph H is going to represent condition B. So it is important to understand the graph structure and relates how it relates to biological function. So I'm going to give you an example of this. So for example, on the left side, here's the graph structure. I have siblings. So note S1, S2, S3, they're siblings, because the definition is that if they have the same neighborhood, then they're siblings. And so therefore, this is the graph structure side. But for the biological function side, we find a pattern there or a meaning there. So let's define some function first. So a protein is viable if its mutation does not cause lethality of the cell. But then we notice and we find there was a study that actually find that the viable proteins were more frequent in the groups of vertex that belong to the vertex siblings group. So this is just like one example of how, you know, graph structure relates to biological function. And so therefore, researchers show that it is actually important to understand this relationship. And one of the interesting research is graph comparisons. So by comparing graph structures, it could help to gain insight to the underlying mechanism and treatments for complex disease. And so you could imagine that this can be very useful in a lot of applications. And again, there are a lot of different biological graphs, and co-expression is just one of them. So imagine that you have a lot of different biological graphs where you could just compare two graphs. And then if you could have applications such as you could, you know, characterize different diseases, you could represent different cancer types, subtypes in different graphs, and then you can represent or identify different drug treatments responses by comparing the graphs. But the challenge is that these biological graphs are big, and so large graph comparisons are computational intensive because they involve the subgraph isomorphic problem, which is NP-complete. And there are a lot of biological data right now as technology keep on advancing. And so therefore, we're going to have more and more biological data, and so larger and larger graphs. So in the objective of this, the presentation is that, so given two graphs, G and H, representing two biological conditions, we want to extract graph structure differences between these two graphs. And so therefore, we need graph comparison algorithms They need to be efficient and scalable, but more, also as important as being scalable and efficient, they need to, the algorithm needs to systematically obtain graph structure differences in, you know, not just one or two, but the more the better, and it have to have meaningful results biologically. And so therefore we did this, we have a method in two steps. Number one, so we first just do the simple method of exhaustive search. So given two graphs, we just exhaustively search all the graph differences between them. And because the way of doing it is because we really want to identify if comparing this is actually going to give us meaningful graph structures that represent some, you know, biological meaning in it. And then after we verify that, yes, the graph difference structure that we extracted, it is biologically meaningful, then we go to step two where we will then have a heuristics to hopefully improve the efficiency. So by doing so, we're going to use the representation of graphlets, which are defined to be all non-isomorphic connected induced graphs on a certain number of vertexes. And in the diagram, it shows all five node graphlets. There are actually two categories of network comparisons in biological graphs. Number one is you look at the entire graph globally, and so there, and you just study it globally, then it lacks the detail. Another one is the local structure. You look at the very detailed structure in the graph, and graphlets is the local structure properties, one of them. And so therefore, given the gene expression data sets, and this can work on anything, but we choose to do it, we applied it on non-small cell lung cancer data sets, and we construct co-expression graphs that you have seen in previous slides. And then for each of the normal graph and then the tumor graph, we enumerate the graphlets of it. And then we categorize graphlets into categories, where if it's in the normal graph, if graphlets that are only shown in the normal graph, they're in the normal category. And if it's in tumor, it's defined to be graphlets that are only in the tumor graph. And then we focus on graphlets that have the same membership across all three data sets that we use and non-small cell lung cancer data sets. And so some of the results that we got from the graphlet approach is that the graph structure differences that we extracted, we can put biological meaning to it. So we find that they are enriched in biological process regulation of lymphocyte activation. Lymphocyte, it's just a type of white blood cell. But interestingly, it is found that in the hallmark paper of cancer, evading immune destruction is an emerging hallmark of cancer. So it's that we kind of find this as well. And also the structures that we got, they're not only co-expressed in the data sets, but there are also protein-protein interactions. And thirdly, they also contain genes that are therapeutic targets in other cancers. So remember, this is the exhaustive search. So basically, we have a normal tissue, we have a correlation matrix generated with the normal tissues. And so similarly, for the tumor tissues, by then we generated the two graphs and we exhaustively searched for the graph differences. But then we noticed that actually, why search the entire graphs? There are actually important areas to compare graphs. If we could extract the areas that are important, then we do not have to go ahead and compare the entire graph. And so therefore, this is what we go about doing for our second step. So again, given the healthy correlation matrix and the tumor correlation matrix, now we generate an absolute correlation difference matrix by subtracting the entries of them. And using that, we created this differential correlation graph, and then using the neighborhoods of them to estimate the graph structure differences. And for now, I'm going to call this the DCG approach. So the benchmark we got from the exhaustive search results, because we exhaustively searched all of the graphlets that are in the tumor category, and again, we took the graphlets that are same membership across all three data sets. The reason why we pick to have the same membership across all three data sets is because we do not want one gene expression studies to have a signal, but the other gene expression study do not have a signal. So like all three of them got it, so it probably is some signal in non-small cell lung cancer. And so this is our result, that these are the data sets name that we use, and 0.001 is the top 1% of the differential correlation matrix that we took to generate the graph. We could see that There are in total 323 in the R3 category, and this what we are able to get using, for example, like 38.66% of the node with respect to the normal graph, 43.03% of node that we have to process with respect to the tumor graph, but the accuracy is pretty high even if we take the top 1%. And so after that, we verify whether, furthermore, we verify if our graph structure differences have really any meaning to it. And so from graphs, from biological graphs, we identify graph structure differences. And from the graph structure differences, we developed computational methods to predict drug combinations on this particular graph structure differences. And then we take the combinations that we predicted, and we take it in our biological experiment, our biological lab, and this is a picture of our lab. And so what we find is that for each of the drug combinations that we predicted, we compare the results of having combination of drugs and against its individual drugs. What we find is for all three cell lines, for all of the three combinations that we test, the cell viability is lowest for our predicted drug combinations, but furthermore, that our predicted drug combinations have lower cell viability than even FDA-approved drugs for non-small cell lung cancer in the environment of cell lines. So finally, the algorithms that we have are generic, but we applied it on non-small cell lung cancer. The graphlet approach is able to extract graph structure differences between normal and tumor conditions, and it corresponds to some biological knowledge. And the DCG approach can estimate the accuracy well, and it is successfully validated in vitro. So this is some of our, these are our collaborators, and these are the fundings. And this is our lab. I want to special thanks for Kiara and Mark who ran the biological validations. Thank you. Thank you.
For a very interesting talk. Questions, please? You have the slide where you use graphs.
Whoops, sorry.
So I guess I'm not familiar with graphlets. They sound like wavelets or shapelets or something. So my question is,
oh, so here we go.
This graphlet-based analysis.
Right.
So are you saying that these sets of graphs, subgraphs, whatever you want to call them,
right,
are like a basis set?
Yes.
So that first one's a basis set for all possible graphs with five vertices and a certain number of edges.
Yeah, oriented this way.
You say this again?
Yeah, like oriented this way, because there could be five vertices and four edges on the next one too.
So if you increase, so to represent any possible graph, you could do this with an infinitely large number of these graphlets.
Yes.
That's what you're saying. I'm going to approximate and say that interactions that can result, the interactions that might result in the cause that result in the effect I don't want or want, can be a result of four relations and five different objects. Is that so? This is like, are you like a convolution or something like this? How do you take those and apply those to your target graph and get some result?
Oh, so basically, given a target graph, right? I just enumerate all of these.
You enumerate
all of these, right? So,
but you do something at every vertex in the target graph, so you know at this vertex it expresses or it looks like this one and that one, or that one and this one. Right?
So I actually consider it labeled, right? So if it's like, if I have, so in the original target graph, if I have A B C D E as the node name of the vertex name, so if ABCDE's edges is of number one, then I'm going to extract that, right? And then if I have, you know, like MNOPQ is the same shape, I'm going to extract that for, because those labels will correspond to unique genes, right? Like that.
It sounds like the beginning of a very interesting discussion. So maybe one last question.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, where do you get your data sets from?
Oh,
how
okay.
And what do they look like when you get them? Like, what is the raw data look like?
Okay, so you get it from GEO, which is a database with a lot of lots of data sets, not all kinds of cancers, all kinds of platforms. So you could just go
what
there.
Is that called,
and GEO? That's the short form of it.
And then I was also wondering, you were talking about some sort of drug combination, but these aren't standard drugs. Like, what kind of drugs were you looking at?
So I take the graph differences. And I actually use the database of CTD. So and that, but the combinations is we compute it like computationally.
Okay, let us thank the speaker again.